You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Welcome to this week's Attacking Scrum podcast. Absolutely loads to get through this week. We have got the Autumn Internationals around the corner, starting with a tough encounter for Wales at home to the All Blacks in Cardiff. We also had some pretty interesting UFC fixtures as well. Three wins for the Welsh sides, none for the Dragons, but helping me to pick the bones out of all of this, as always, Dan Killick and the Mighty Murph. How are you, Dan?
I'm really good, Jed. Yeah, top weekend of rugby. And I think the tournament is so much better than it was previously, isn't it? Really, really good.
Do you know what? I'd agree with you on that one. And as you know, I had very little excitement about the South African sides joining. I'm not quite sure what it is, but there's been a lot less one-sided fixtures at the start of the season. My gut says it's because we're going to be playing less games in the international window. Now, I know that's set against the backdrop of Wales playing a game outside the international window, but I just think that there is an incentive for people to pick their best sides for once, and I think that that's perhaps starting to offer less massive mismatches. What do you reckon to that, Murph?
Yeah, you're right. It's not just the arranged games outside the international windows. It's arranging league fixtures inside the international.
Yeah, that's what I meant. Yeah.
Yeah, it's exactly what you meant, obviously. Absolutely. I don't know if it's the arrival of the proper South African sides or the arrival of that huge company that I forget the name of, the American sports company.
Rock Nation,
the arrival of them, that's given sort of a bit of a...
I like to think Jay-Z's picking the teams every week. he's leaning on Benetton to go fully loaded.
There was an executive from high up in the organisation interviewed pitchside at the Dragons early in the season. I don't know if you saw that, but
I didn't.
He looked like he'd never been to rugby in his life. You know, he looked like a pundit from the NFL.
He just
exuded like a professional air, professional sports business air about him, whereas, let's be honest, normally it's just an ex-player in a blazer.
Yeah.
When it's our end of the scale, so maybe that is having an influence. I don't know. I mean, it might be reading too much into it. I don't know. But everyone seems to be buying into it, and maybe that's because they know they'll have all their players available for most of the games, I suppose. I don't know.
Yeah,
that's a good point, Murph. It does seem a lot more professional, doesn't it? Just, you know, you look at the referees look better.
They're not any better than the referee.
Hang the fuck on.
Just look
let's
better.
Let's not go too far.
Yeah, God, when you've watched Ben Whitehouse referee a game, that comes crashing to the ground again. I don't know though. Generally, it has been a lot more enjoyable than any of the previous incarnations so far. I know it's only whatever it is, week 4 or 5, but nonetheless, definitely been enjoying it a bit more. And normally speaking, it's only really the kind of the derby fixtures that get you going. The rest of the time, you're just watching. Way to play, you know, I'm a lot of the time just watching players thinking, oh, how, you know, how are they doing form wise for the Wales team? But it feels a lot more competitive league. I mean, that said, we know Leinster will win it, but nonetheless, it's nice to have some good stuff to look at. But that kind of brings us on to Friday night, where we'll start. Win for the Scarlets. We said they needed to get a win on last week's show. They did do that. Were you impressed, Dan?
Yeah, I was impressed by the fact that they got. You know, they got the win. They were they've been up against it, haven't they? They've been pretty disappointing, I think, and you know, quite a lot of pressure has been, you know, being mounted on them. And it was a must win game, and they delivered. And you know, big game player Scott Williams was absolutely magnificent, wasn't he? Along with Dane Blacker as well. I thought he had a top game as well, and was a constant threat, moved the ball away nicely, and it was a much needed win for the Scarlets.
That first try was phenomenal, actually, the first Blacker one with the offloads from Sam Lucy and who else was there? Shingler, maybe? I can't remember. I think it was another back row forward with some brilliant handling in the
showreel stuff, wasn't it?
It was fantastic, yeah. And then a great support line from Blacker. But I agree, I thought Blacker had a good game, but yeah, I mean, Scott Williams just made good decisions all night, looked really, really solid, but also, like we said before, a bit more of a footballer about him, I think, now as well. You know, it seems to be less about trying to just get him to use power, and I think he is definitely looking to use his head to unlock defences, and that seems to suit him very well. What did you make of the game, Merv?
Yeah, I think Scott Williams being fit, because he wasn't sure he was fit. Mm. We knew they were losing two centres to the Welsh squad, but last week it wasn't clear that Scott Williams was going to be fit for this week, and that turned out to be the difference between them winning and losing, because he's played well all game and had two assists, so two scoring passes, and they won 34-28 in the end, which was, even though they were... should have been comfortable at the end, they still managed to give Dwayne Peel heart failure with a interception, which meant they couldn't kind of relax at the end and just, you know, wait for the final whistle. They had to keep going. But I don't know if he had been unavailable. I don't know who they'd have turned to, but he definitely made the difference between two sides on the night. So
yeah, he did. The other thing I thought that generally, you know, like we've said, their defence has been really poor this season, and to be fair, yeah, like you said, it was a kind of needless intercept pass from Angus O'Brien. But I thought what they did quite well on the defensive front is they weren't kind of committing too many men at the breakdown. And I think that's a pack that is light of out-and-out fetches, I would say. You know, I think if you certainly look back at Scarlet's teams of a few years ago, and you've got Cubby Boy and John Barkley and Ty Byrne and those kind of players in there, and you've got lots of fetches. That pack just simply didn't have it, and I think they kind of made it. You know, obviously had the game plan to not commit too many men and try and stifle them out wide, and that generally served them pretty well. So I think it was a big step forward. And actually, I think the main thing is, if you consider it's something like 20 players unavailable for them, with a mixture of Wales and kind of some long term injuries. So. I think he needed that one, but I think that'll do them the world of good in terms of getting a bit of confidence in the camp.
I think a special mention as well for Steph as well, on the wing. I thought he had a really good game. He was sort of involved in most of the good stuff that came from the Scarlets. Was a constant threat and managed to get a lot of the offloading. You know, when they got an offload, they seemed to cause real damage, and he seemed to be at the heart of that. We know he struggled at international level, hasn't he? But I thought he had a fine game.
Yeah, he did, and yeah, there was quite a few good individual performances in there. So I think that's I'll definitely kind of give a bit of breathing space to Dwayne Peel as they head into the international window. Saturday, then we got two games on the Saturday, starting with the derby game, Cardiff beating the Dragons. Seemed like the same old story here for the Dragons. Very intense opening to the game. Couldn't put together a performance in the second half, and it cost them. I thought the scoreline flattered the Dragons, if I'm honest, particularly against a 14-man side for over half an hour. What did you make of that one, Murph?
Yeah, I've seen the highlights and I've seen the first half, but I haven't speed watched the whole of the second half yet. But I got a rough idea, and it's funny because we were complimenting the front row signings they'd made early in the season when they were putting out a full strength pack with Will Rowlands there and whoever else, or the whole back row obviously as well. The scrum was doing okay, but it was, I want to say useless, but it was under pressure against Cardiff the whole time. And I think that probably enabled Cardiff to piggyback up the pitch for field position all the time. And then, because obviously they were 14-3 down. So I was, you know, strapping myself in for a tight game after that, but they just couldn't really keep the penalty count down enough to hold Cardiff back. And the other one that annoyed me, say, putting my Newport hat on, if you don't, my Dragons hat on, was the Palamemos try to chip through where there was just no one in the backfield at all. Totally empty backfield. Mm-hmm. I did try to rewind to see what had happened to the fullback, or where I assume Jordan Williams was supposed to be hanging back, but what happened to him, whether he was at the bottom of a ruck and hadn't got back in position or what, but I couldn't work out what had happened to him. So that was a really soft try, I think. Well spotted by Lloyd Williams, in fairness, but it should always be a player sort of 30 feet behind the ruck for just such a thing. And totally absent. So soft stuff like that undid him, really.
Couldn't have put it better myself, Murph.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah, I mean, the thing with the front rows is, yeah, they had a rough night. And I think if you get a couple of early decisions against you with a prop, particularly like Arhip, you could well be in for a rough night. I think, again, particularly, like you say, because you're missing some of the bulk behind you. Not that Joe Davis and Maximu are small lads, but, you know, when you lose your first choice locks behind you, That's going to make a difference. You know, I still think they're going to be excellent signs. And again, they were very good in the loose again. But yeah, they had a rough night. And that I can kind of forgive, because that happens as a front row forward. The softness of some of the, not just the tries, but just the you know, the unforced errors. Sam Davis kicking out on the full or giving away a soft penalty. Those kind of things. A number of restarts that were just bungled the whole time. And it's stuff like that that just is so frustrating, because, again, you lose all the momentum that you've gained by scoring the try. And that's the stuff that's, you know, that is just is basic stuff. And I think that's what made it so frustrating. And again, second half, I just thought it was really poor performance. And against 14 men for half an hour, you've got to be better than that. And it was, yeah, I don't know, a real tough one to take. Did you catch this one, Dan?
I've got this one to catch up during the week, actually. That was the one game I couldn't make. So who were the standout players on both sides?
This is your thing, Killick, isn't it? I don't know why it's taken me 5 years to realise this, but you just want to talk about the individual performances, don't you?
I do.
Who's that? I mean, to be fair, there were a couple of performances.
Well, Lloyd Williams.
There were a couple of performances that stood out. Like, Lloyd was
excellent. That's why I'm amazed you haven't seen the game yet.
Yeah,
I'm definitely watching it now.
Yeah, I thought Lloyd Williams was excellent. I actually thought Jared Evans did a very good job in trying circumstances, and I think again, you know, if you're looking at two players in Jared Evans and Sam Davis, who are, you know, I would guess the next cabs off the rank if there are any injuries in the Wales camp, you'd only be looking at Jared there, really. I thought it was one of those games where you needed Sam Davis to grab it. And this is a bit harsh, because it wasn't all bad, but it's one of those where he's an experienced enough player now, and in a side like that, you need him to be flawless in order to get over the line. And he didn't have his, you know, he didn't have his best game, I didn't think. But then, you know, there were a couple of good things from the Dragons. I thought Keddie had an excellent game. You know, just got through a ton of work and was carrying a bit more like the Keddie that we saw, you know, under 20 level. There was a lot more kind of explosive carries, whereas I think we've seen him very much shift into a blind side doing lots of kind of donkey work over recent times. So I think that was encouraging.
Is he playing eight then? Was he?
No, he did play six, and Ollie Griffiths played eight. Okay. Yeah.
But nice player.
Yeah, he did. He did well. Who else was impressive for Cardiff?
Well, Hallam Amos featured a lot, scored a try, and was tackled really well to save another try.
I thought
on the week that he's announced his retirement. By the way.
Yeah. No. Absolutely. And I think the front row, as we've said, you know, they had a great night, both Domachowski and Arhip. But then again, in the back row, Boyd and Turnbull are just, you know, a pair of bastards in the best possible sense. And I thought they popped up with some good penalties exactly when they needed them, and or an important tackle or an important carry, all of that kind of really reliable stuff that you've come to expect from them. And
they rarely have poor games, do they?
Yeah,
the pair of them.
Yeah,
you know what you're going to get from them, you know, week in, week out.
Yeah, so, you know, again, it's another frustrating loss for the Dragons. But I think, you know, Cardiff will be pleased with that, because particularly losing Ray Lilo on whatever it was, 50-odd minutes.
What happened there then?
High shot on Sam Davis, was as well. Ben Whitehouse, yeah. I think, waved play on before... Eventually, having a look at the TMO while Sam Davis is picking his jaw up off the floor. Again, no malice in it, but it was a very, very hard hit direct to the chin, and it was, you know, as clear a red card as you'll ever see. But again, you know, they closed the game out well, Cardiff. They managed it well, I thought, and you know, we all know what they're capable of with ball in hand. But I thought they were pretty savvy on the night, and you know, got themselves a good win.
Yeah, before we wrap up on that one, there's a special mention for Yestin there, because he ended up with Matthew Morgan, Jordan Williams and Dan Fish all on the pitch at the end. So
that is true, actually.
He didn't feature much, Dan Fish, on the right wing. Well, I didn't see much of the ball as Jordan Williams did, or Matthew Morgan.
No.
But I'm still a big fan of Jordan Williams.
Yeah, I am, but he didn't. I felt like he was trying to do a bit too much on Saturday night, and sometimes you can have those games like that. But he's, you know, when it works, as we saw in that Connacht game, he's an absolutely superb talent, and he's a big asset to the Dragons, I think. But they managed to keep him quiet very well, Cardiff, to be fair. So there you go, big win for the Ospreys. Well, I say, you know, not scoreline wise, but I think, you know, losing your Wales internationals and putting away a strong Munster team, you know, a Munster team able to bring Conor Murray and Dialende off the bench. Big result.
Unreal.
Huge result.
When I saw the score, I didn't see it live. I was down the Knoll. My team were playing, my club were playing Neathway. I came back to Cardiff, and then later on I checked the score. I had to read it twice. I just could not. After I'd seen the side, because I mean, the back row for Munster was Omani and Byrne. And then they were bringing on Conor Murray and Dialende. I didn't realise Dialende was going to be available again before the Autumn Internationals. And when you look at that and then you realise who's been pulled out of the Ospreys side, you start to worry then about the game on the night. So when I saw the win, I was like, oh my word. And I managed to catch up and watch the game. And full value for that win.
Dan, I know you were making massive notes on the players who impressed you, and I think this is obviously the opportunity to do it. Who stood out?
Yeah, well, that was an outstanding performance from the Ospreys, wasn't it? I thought the pack were brilliant, brilliant to a man. They fronted up, you know, bullied the Munster pack. It was a real good ding-dong up front on the scrums. I think the Ospreys did a job there. Rhys Davies got through a mountain of work. I think you put a tweet out on that, and he did. He was everywhere, wasn't he? So quick to his feet, tackling everyone. Mm. He's in amongst it. He looks as if he's up for mixing it as well, if anything kicks off, which is always nice to see.
That's another shout for Yeston, isn't it? Because he always talks about his mate who says he wants second row to be about dog, and he is Rhys Davies. It's just like, I think he's just full of niggle and wants to get stuck in and do the hard work. And I thought I thought he was good, but Jack Morgan in the back row. It's beyond me why he's not in the Wales squad.
Yeah, Jack Morgan. I mean, it was the complete performance from him. I think he carried. I love the fact that we saw the carrying game that we know he's got. Hard guy to put down, you know. And they're big boys, you know, the Munster boys. They tackle well. They hit you hard. They want to level you. And he didn't take a backward step. He carried well. Was over Jacqueline. We know all that side of it. Link game, just a brilliant performance from him. And I also thought Nicky Smith was really, really good. Really good up front. Pack were just brilliant. But yeah, Wayne Pivak will be looking at that and thinking, you know, Rhys Davies, you know, Nicky, Jack Morgan, you know.
Well, Willie, I mean, I don't know that any of this is a massive surprise, I would say.
The thing is, though, it's up against that's a proper side there.
Yeah, that's a good point.
So, you know, you've got internationals galore there, and they had them. You know, they really fronted up. I can't believe it was the set, you know, I can't believe it was this, you know, that was the Osprey side that we saw play, you know, a couple of weeks back.
It more and more suggests that game was a blip, actually, doesn't it? I think the Ospreys are going to be hard to beat this term. I think they've got more strength in depth now, as that showed on Saturday night. And again, they didn't get over the try line, but they kept themselves in the game with some smart, savvy stuff. And, you know, you keep your points. If you keep the points and you defend well, then there are league games there to be won, and that's what makes me think they're going to be a very tough side to beat.
Yeah, gain line they were. That's a good point. Yeah, gain line they were brilliant, weren't they? Line speed was really, really accurate, to use a horrible word. And Rhys, your man Rhys Webb. I mean, I'm sure Murph and you were absolutely loving his performance. It was.
I think that's impressive. The bigger mockery of the squad selection than the others you mentioned, because I don't think, although I, well, we know how good Gareth Davies and Thomas Watkins and the other guy, Kieran Hardy, can be, I'm not sure any of them can play like the way Rhys Webb did yesterday. It's just the delay on his pass, he seems to have forever on the ball all the time.
He did. And
as deadly as Gareth Davies, Thomas Watkins can play, I don't think any of them are quite on that level. And they just, I know the age thing, but it seems like he's cast off. And go back to Jack Morgan, I agree with what you said, how he's not in the Welsh squad is weird, but you have to, specifically, who would you have him instead of Thomas Young or Ellis Jenkins?
If I'm honest, either. Definitely Thomas Young, I think. Mm. But again, that might be because I don't watch Thomas Young play enough. You know, I think that might have something to do with that. And Ellis, you know, that you'd struggle to find a bigger fan of Ellis than me. But again, I think he's still working his way back to that.
Well, it was a shock. Ellis was a shock because everyone knows he's not back to that level. So his selection was a bit of a shock.
Yeah.
I just wonder if the selectors went, Wayne Pivak or the selectors, whatever you want to call it, just went more for experience with Tiprick not being available.
Yeah.
Ellis Jenkins.
And the media as well. Yeah, of
course. And I mean, it looks inevitable that Jack Morton's going to get picked if he keeps playing like this. It's just, you know, it's just going to happen. But you're right about what you said there about the Sharks game. You take that out and they're undefeated.
Hmm. Yeah,
undefeated this year, and they looked like an undefeated side last night. They looked like a side who, God knows what was happening that Friday night against the Sharks.
Yeah.
And I just before we move on from that one, I'd like to echo the Rhys Davies. It is Rhys, is it?
Yeah,
the second
Rhys Davies. Yeah,
it's also Thomas Williams as well, mate. Not Thomas.
Oh, what I call? Oh, shit. talk too fast and my tongue, my brain's not interested in accuracy after that point. Rhys Davies, that's as good a performance as any second row in the country this year, last night. And so some of the youngsters, not the youngsters, Seb Davises and the Ben Carters, haven't really played as well as he did, as well as Rhys did last night. So that's something to keep an eye on. And also, something that stuck in my mind is Dan was saying about bullying. Mm. He used the word bully, which is something Munster like to do. And it was on my mind because especially when they're in an arm wrestle type game like that, they just like to, it's not, obviously they're not punching anyone, but it's like a,
there's a lot of needle in there.
There's a body language about them. When they're stood next to you, like they're kind of a air of contempt and superiority. Well, Bradley Davies is the exact perfect person you want when someone's trying to bully you up front, because you just can't bully him. You can't, he's not, so every time there's a bit of aggro and Bradley Davies is there, no one bothers. Mm. They just walk away. It's easier. But if it was a young kid on the way up, they would definitely be trying to intimidate him and you know, give him a bit of needle and get under his skin. Bradley Davies, they all just sort of say, oh, well, it's no point in that. I'll just walk off. And so he's a perfect, last night, yesterday, he was a perfect, the perfect selection for that match.
Yeah, he had a big game actually, didn't he, as well? That's a good,
he did.
Good point on Bradley.
The second half against
big game.
By the way, he's been around, it's like 16 years. He's exactly the same age as Alan Wynne. Came through the same under 20s as Alan Wynne and Ian Evans, and still going, it's unreal, still going strong.
Yeah, it is. And do you know what? It's been really good to see these, particularly these last two performances, because I thought it was, it's a bit, you know, when he was in the World Cup training squad, and it was a little bit sad kind of watching that he wasn't quite at that international level anymore. He wasn't quite at the level to go to a World Cup. But he's proven that he can do a really valuable job for them. And there was like a 10-minute spell against Benetton the week before where he's doing his very best kind of Nakarawa impression, which, again, is something you wouldn't necessarily associate with him. But I think Dan hit the nail on the head there when he said it's kind of the quality of the opposition. And, we've often said that, sometimes it can be a bit, you can kind of flatter to deceive a little bit in that league, and it's a Foss last form rather than Cheltenham Gold Cup form. But I think, beating that Munster side with some of those performances in there is pretty credible stuff. So hats off.
I think another point on Webb, I don't know that I mentioned it, but his kick, did I mention his kicking game? His
you
kicking
didn't, game. But mate, when you say I've got another point on Webb, I will chuck the rest of the show out the window and you can go for it.
Yeah, his kicking game was, you had to just stand back and admire it. It was so good. And then his what he does offer, which is so different to the other tens, isn't it, is the reading of the game, but also the reading of his players, like his pack and the backs. So he just knows, it's like intuitive, isn't it? He knows what the forwards want and what the backs want. And now that he looks to be match fit, I was looking at him yesterday and thinking, God, he's a different nine to the nines we've got in the in the squad, and we've always sort of known that, but now he's fit. That was a pretty good performance.
Just digging into my crappy memory, but wasn't the initial reason for Rhys Webb being left out of a squad or picked in a squad and then not used because his fitness levels weren't there when he came back?
I think that is the true. Side. Yeah.
And then he's never been looked at again. And he does actually look fully fit now, he does, to be honest.
But to be fair, that you could kind of see that. He did look like a guy who hadn't played much rugby when he got back from France. Mm. And it doesn't look that case anymore. I mean, I would say,
they mentioned his pace as well, didn't they? Or lack of. His pace, like,
just all, it must have been like it's just all round conditioning, wasn't up to scratch. Mm. But he did. He played 70 minutes last night, and looked sharp. He looked really good fitness wise. look, we've been over this last week, I mean, with the selections, so there's no point in kicking that horse anymore.
Still, nice couple of weeks off for you now, Reece. Get your feet up. Enjoy watching the game on the telly. Right, we are going to look ahead to Wales' awesome campaign after the break. But first, we're going to do just that and have a brief moment for Dan Killick to compose himself. We'll be back in a minute. Right, time then to look ahead to Wales versus New Zealand. What a game to start with outside the international window, as we said. So Wales will be shorn of their English-based players, and New Zealand, meanwhile, have run up a nice century against the USA with their essentially with their second string to come in, and coming off the back of another rugby championship victory. They did admittedly lose one game during that, but anything that gives you hope, Dan, that Wales can get a win next week?
I don't know. It's a funny one to answer, isn't it? I mean, I just want us to go out and give absolutely everything and have a bloody good go at them, you know. And it's, I'm going to the game. Can't wait. Really hoping that this is the game, this is the one that we can do it. But the smart money's on New Zealand, isn't it? Of course. I don't think there's much that we could pull on at the moment to say that there's going to be a Welsh win, is there? But maybe that's, you know, is there ever going to be that time? So we've got to beat them at some point, Jed.
We do. Absolutely. I mean, the thing for me, I think it's kind of got to be a 2003 Rugby World Cup style performance. Do you know what I mean? That one that kind of came completely out of the blue with almost with a second string side where we just started throwing the ball around and played that most amazing, breathtaking game of rugby. I have seen like we said, I was very sceptical about Wales' form during the Six Nations, and we laughed about it being the Jam Slam and the Championship and all that. But the best form I have seen from Wales was in that defeat against France, Wayne Pivac's Wales, this is. And that level of intensity, if they can play anything like that, then I think we're into a different ball game completely. However, the thing for me is no Toby, no Dan Bigger. Who else am I missing off that earlier? Obviously no Tipperick because of injury. I'd be very surprised if Liam Williams is fit. And I think, you know, that level of quality coming out of your side against a New Zealand side who've been playing together for months, I think it's going to be a very, very tough assignment. Murph?
Correct. yeah. I mean, even the way the Southern Hemisphere sides have been playing in the Rugby Championship and what have you over the last few months, even South Africa and Australia, with all our players back, is going to be tough to beat. So first up, like notoriously bad starters in Six Nations and Ultimate International Series, I just can't see it. Obviously now 5 years ago, maybe some of that when Ireland beat New Zealand in quick succession.
Yeah.
Ireland were going really well under Joe Schmidt, and there was at least some sort of injury crisis going on in the Kiwi side. I think it was Brody Retallick or Sam Whitelock were unavailable. Might have been both unavailable for the Chicago game. And that was their in. That was the slight chink in the armour. And even then, they still had to play really well. And that's how it came to pass. But for us, I mean, there might be one or two injuries in the New Zealand side for all I know, but not enough.
I think it's sod's law, actually, because I think Whitelock returned yesterday, having had a long layoff, which again just gives them another option. I think Sam Kane's on the way back as well. He might have even got on the pitch yesterday. So there's it's kind of the opposite. They've got class coming back in and already have a pretty settled side anyway. So
on that with the American side, obviously, I mean, they actually scored their first ever try against New Zealand, didn't they, on that day? But North American rugby generally, that's America and Canada, has never been worse.
Yeah, they lost to Uruguay, didn't they, the other week?
They're losing to South American sides now, Brazil and Uruguay and all sorts of...
Chile have had a good run, haven't they?
They're really poor up there. I don't know what's going on with them. They just have spare great athletes hanging around without a contract in a professional game, so it all turned to rugby, and they don't seem to get that anymore. So the Canadian side that came to play us in the summer was possibly the worst Canadian side that's ever turned up on our shores. So.
Yeah, you could always point to a bit of quality in the Canadian side throughout history, couldn't you? Whether it's a Dan Boer or a Van der Merwe or a Gareth Rees or a Rod Snow or whatever.
Al Sharon,
exactly.
The Tate brothers.
Tate, yeah.
Win Stanley, whoever, you know, there was always a bit of class in there. Who was it who threw, Murph, you might remember this. It might have been against England, but one of the Canadian players threw like an NFL-style pass sideways across the pitch.
No, I can't remember who it was, but I do remember the occasion well, yeah.
Yeah, we'll have to try and dig
it. Might have been Gareth Rees. Gareth Rees?
Yeah, like a funny set move. Gareth Rees.
I thought I'd remembered it if it was Gareth Rees. But maybe. I'll have a look. We'll dig it out and tweet it anyway. That's by the by. Yeah. To bring it back to New Zealand, obviously, yeah, like you say, I don't think you can read anything into the fact that they humped the USA. But I just think it's the, you know, even if this was kind of a Wales 2019 side coming into this, I think it's the fact that New Zealand have played so much time together, and like you say, we're notoriously bad starters at the best of times, yet alone with a load of players missing. But do you think it's going to be an interesting one selection wise, Dan, or do you think that the side pretty much selects itself at the minute?
Yeah, I think it probably pretty much does select itself, but I don't know whether it's crazy or part of me would like to see, I don't know, how are we going to beat New Zealand? You know, could we do something different? Could we mix it up to try and shock them? The thing is with New Zealand is they tend to adapt so quickly, don't they? To, you know, if there is a period of 5-10 minutes where you catch them, you know, slightly off guard, they're the best team at sort of adapting and going and on the pitch and going, right, we now need to change what we're doing. Whereas, you know, we, for instance, you know, we're slow to adapt, aren't we? So it probably does pick itself, but I think, you know, we need to have a couple of different, if we can, different players to go in different directions should it be needed or when it's needed, then maybe it's more likely.
Is it time to play selectors? Do we want to put the selecting blazers on?
Yeah, come on.
I'll get my.
I'll tell you one way to catch them. One way to kind of catch them off guard is to see if they want to play soccer instead.
Yeah.
Like paper, scissors, stone, even.
That is a
50-50 chance.
I tell you what, it's a good that's a good shout, that. I'd be interested to see, because you would back some of those New Zealand players to have some good soccer skills. But, you know, we've got Aaron Wainwright in the ranks there. Yeah, you'd pick him. He's some decent pedigree with the round ball. There must be a few others in the Wales side.
Mm. And also we could just like sneak Aaron Ramsey on the pitch.
No, I'm not.
They haven't got anyone back home in their locker like that, for sure.
You've taken it too far. You've taken it too far now, Murph. You've taken it too far. That bit's ridiculous.
I'm getting carried away. I think this is the Welsh win. This is the Welsh win we've been looking for.
Yeah.
Kill it.
We've ever played them at soccer, have we?
Yeah, we have. We played them in a friendly, I think. I don't know, maybe 10 years ago. I definitely know we played them, but I have no recollection of the game whatsoever. No, a long time ago, but right. Let's have a look at the squad then, and the side that we want to have a look at. Start as always in the front row. I mean, for me, I can only see a front row of Wyn Jones, Ken Owens, and Thomas Francis. That to me is the only option on the front row. Dan, any again? This is your area of expertise, mate. You love talking about scrummaging and front row play. What are your thoughts on the 1-2-3?
It is, yeah, it is my area. I can't see there being any changes to that to the three you've picked there. The big lumps, I think, are what's needed there.
Yeah, the only discussion there is the bench, isn't it? I think. I mean, you never know, but the only, you know, it's like I say, Wyn Jones, Ken Owens, and Tom Francis, and then do you go Will Griff or Dylan? You want Dylan Lewis if it opens up? Because it will open up. Obviously, it might open up from the first minute against New Zealand. You never know. And then Rodri, God knows, or Rhys Carey. Probably.
Can we pick
second.
Nicky? Oh no, he's not.
Yeah. And
sorry,
then,
I had to.
Probably Hooker is more straightforward because we know that Ryan is a bit of a favourite, so he's more than likely.
Well, also, I think there's a slight injury concern with Elliot Dee as well.
All right,
went
okay.
off last week. I think he might be facing a fitness race there. So I think, yeah, I'm fairly certain Elias will be on the bench. Yeah, what do you do for? I mean, I would be tempted to go Will Griff tight head and then Rhys Carey loose head cover.
Yeah.
I think, yeah, just, you know, there is that degree. I mean, like, Gary's still raw, isn't he? But I think at least there's that wrecking ball element of bringing him on and having that bit of X factor. What do you reckon, Dan?
Yeah, I'd go with that. I think, so Will Griff over Dylan. I think we need a top end scrummager, don't we? I would say against them. Got to win the set piece, or you know, give ourselves the best chance then of having, you know, parity or winning it. You know, let's go and win it. And then Carey, he's, you know, sometimes can blow hot and cold in that department, can't he? But he's got a lovely hands, carries well. He seems to be fitter now. I think he looks fitter. So yeah, I'd be happy with that. Let's get Carey on the bench. I think maybe you'd be delighted with that, wouldn't you?
Yeah, I'd be happy with that, but a little bit like Ryan Elias being a bit of a favourite. I think Roger Jones is a bit of a favourite as well as Wayne's. So it wouldn't be a surprise me at all, because I think that's what was happening towards the end of the Six Nations last season, that Roger Jones was getting the bench spot instead of Rhys Carey.
Now you're asking. So,
yeah, I think he was. But it might have been because of a bit of an injury scare to Wyn Jones or something. Anyway, so yeah, that wouldn't surprise me if it's that's what I would go for. It wouldn't surprise me if Wayne disagrees.
All right, well, let's go with our selection for now. Second row for me, it's Beard and Alan Wyn Jones. As good as Will Rowland has been this season, I think that Beard just has that, you know, especially coming off the back of the Lions tour where he made a big impact. I think he's going to be more battle hardened for that ultimate test. So it's Beard and Alan Wyn Jones for me.
Me too. I think he's important for our line out options.
Yeah.
Alan Beard. So.
Yeah, this is. I was wondering whether there was any way we could have Beard coming off the bench. But it just doesn't quite work, I don't think, as well. So. Yeah, it's Will Rowland's on the bench and keep that established pairing of Alan Wyn and Beard. Yep.
Fair enough. Back row, I guess, is where it gets a bit more interesting. Tricky. I'm gonna hand this one over to Murph first.
Well, as our resident back rower.
Based on availability here in this back three, I'd go Dragons back row.
It's tempting, isn't it? It is tempting.
Well, Wainwright starts whatever we decide. Wainwright starting because Faletau's unavailable.
Well, you could start Ross at eight, I suppose.
Well, yeah, but when's the last time he did that for Wales? When's the last time he did it for the Dragons? He hasn't done that much lately, is he? Mm. But, I mean, you could do it, but what I'm getting at is, if you go with Wainwright, it looks like Wainwright is the second choice eight in the squad, mm-hmm. right? Once you do that, it's Moriarty or Ellis Jenkins, allegedly, in theory anyway, Thomas Young or Tim Basham.
Yeah,
that's what it comes down to after that. So I and you know, based on the way they've been playing, that Dragons back row would be all right for me. I'm not doing that to be controversial. I think that will happen.
I don't think it is controversial. I think it's a pretty sensible selection. Dan, would you be on board with that?
Yeah, fully on board with that. I think there's a nice balance to that back row. They've played very well together this season, haven't they? And they know each other's game inside and out. So if you look at that pack, then we've got a back row that knows each other really well, and a second row partnership that knows each other exceptionally well. And
the front row.
Yeah.
Was that the starting front row in the World Cup semi-final? It probably was, wasn't it?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
So, yes, I like that.
All right. Well, look, that's not a bad pack at all, is it? To be fair, so I like the look of that. God, I started to get a bit more Dan Killick, a bit more optimistic about this.
Here we go. Intrigued to see how Basham goes as well. Really am. Really looking forward to seeing how he plays.
I think from what I've, you know, having watched him play a lot, I think he's a pretty fearless player. You know, he certainly plays fearlessly, doesn't he? And I get the feeling that he would relish getting out there with a seven on his back and, you know, not being introduced slowly and going, right, this is for me and looking to really, really tear it up. And obviously, like we said last time we played New Zealand, when we were there, Dan and Navidi put in that outstanding performance that really announced himself on the international stage. And I wouldn't be surprised if Basham has that kind of performance in him.
Yeah, I think he probably knows as well, doesn't he, that this is, he's got an opportunity here, and the seven shirt is so hotly contested that if he can get a man of the match performance, you know, if he puts in just the best game he could possibly have, then he's given himself every chance and really sort of announced himself on the international stage. So yeah, I agree with you. I think he'll be absolutely bouncing for this. No one will be able to, you know, stop him from going for it. So yeah, massive game for him, isn't it? And the rest of the Dragons boys around him.
All right. Well, yes, Dragons back row it is then.
The bench for the back row is interesting because there's only two players to choose from. After what's left is Thomas Young and Ellis Jenkins, unless you count Schunzer as a back row forward, but I don't think they've got any intention of exposing him to the All Blacks at this stage on his first cap. So it's literally either put Thomas Young or Ellis Jenkins on the bench, and that's that. So
I'm still not sure Ellis is going to be fit, if I'm honest. He might be. I know they say it's precaution. Maybe it is, but you naturally worry a bit given his injury history.
Yeah.
I don't know how much opportunity he's had to train. So with that in mind, maybe it's Thomas Young. Who would you go for, Dan?
I'd go with Thomas Young on the bench. Yeah, for me.
Okay, Merv.
Yeah, I'm either. I mean, either's going to be fine. You know, if Ellis Jenkins is fit and he plays, I'm not going to quibble over that. But if the game gets really open and the ball's in wide areas, Thomas Young is. I think he's our best, most effective operator like that in the squad.
Do you think there's a chance that Pivac might pick him on those grounds, given that, you know,
to start,
given that Tipperick is kind of the your usual starting seven for him?
Well, it's a gamble if you do that, because he hasn't been. When was his last start? Did he ever run out in the summer?
No. I don't think no. so. I think he played against Italy in 2019 or something.
Yeah, so it's a bit of a curveball, that one, if you just suddenly throw him in against the best, you know, well, they're not actually the best team in the world, are they? Or are they? You know, traditionally the best team in the world, you just throw him in like that.
I think it's safe to still call them the best team in the world.
Yeah.
It'd be so odd. I think it'd be the wrong call if he did, wouldn't it? Because they all the boys in the Dragons back row and I know their roles.
Yeah, it breaks that up, doesn't it? It breaks that up if you do it, yeah.
Fair enough. All right then. So to wrap it up on the forwards, we're going Wyn Jones, Ken Owens, Thomas Francis, Adam Beard, Alan Wyn-Jones, Ross Moriarty, Tane Basham, Aaron Wainwright, and then on the bench, Ryan Elias, Rhys Carey, Will Griff-John, Will Rowlands, and Thomas Young. Right, into the backs. Look, you can see Killick's eyes lighting up now as well.
You roll a dice on this number nine selection.
I don't think you do roll a dice. I think out and out, you have to go Thomas Williams and back him. And if he has the
I didn't mean for us.
Right.
We know what we want. But what will actually get picked, trying to guess what he would pitch, you just roll the dice. I wouldn't surprise me if he picked Kieran Hardy, even though he's in poor form.
I'm surprised you won't bet. Obviously, he likes him. I can't see him picking him. I really can't. But again, you know, if I'm honest, I didn't see him being in the squad. It might be completely out of left field. I mean, for me, it's 100% Thomas Williams. Dan?
I think Thomas Williams will get the nod, yeah. I don't know about the bench, actually.
Who are you picking, then?
I pick Thomas Williams and Hardy on the bench.
I think in an alternative universe where Thomas Williams didn't strain his hamstring at the start of the Six Nations, he went on the Lions tour and did really well. Only that injury meant that the other boys had to come in and have a run at nine. So possibly that was Wayne's first choice when everyone was fit at the start of the year. And maybe he'll go back to Thomas again. I would. I know. Obviously, I think we all would, wouldn't we?
Yeah.
And based on the fact that Gareth Davies is playing much better for Llanelli than Kieran Hardy is, I would go Gareth Davies on the bench.
I would do exactly the same. I think to bring
do you
it
think,
back
Do you
to...
think Pivac will pick Hardy?
No.
Gareth?
I think he will. I think he'll get Gareth Davies off the bench.
I think he likes Hardy, though, doesn't he?
Oh, he definitely likes him. No doubt about it.
Yeah. Yeah,
but you're right. Obviously, he did pick Thomas Williams to start the campaign in the Six Nations. So again, he obviously does rate him. For me, it's like, you know, to bring it back to horse racing terms, for no reason other than I really like horse racing. Thomas Williams is the unexposed one, right? We haven't seen yet what he's capable of at international level. And I think he might have the improvement in him to be as good as Reese Webb. He might not, but I think it's that level of, I think he's got that level of ability. If he can apply himself, stay fit, etc. I think we know what Gareth Davies is capable of. It's about him trying to recreate his best form, which is perhaps from a couple of years ago. And I think, if I'm honest, I think we've seen what Kieran Hardy is capable of, but he's not playing like it at the moment. And I think the best form in there is, you know, is Thomas Williams.
So here's a question, right? If Reese Webb was in the squad now,
yep,
after that Munster performance, who would you pick at nine starting?
Well, as you know, it's no secret. I'd have been picking Reese Webb since February 2020. Maybe if he wasn't fully fit then, fine. But he would definitely be in the squad, and I would start him.
You start him, would you? Because I wouldn't have previously. But off that performance, he was back for me. But just the only reason I say it is, imagine now you could pick, you know, Thomas Williams, say, to start, Reese Webb to come off. You know, wow. I think there is some wow to that. You know,
there is, but I think there's also wow if you were bringing Thomas Williams off the bench as well. You know, I think Webby, like you said, Webby controls the game so well, and your kicking has to be spot on against New Zealand. Well, he's got to be spot on at international level anyway, and I think he does have that. He does have an excellent kicking game, which is perhaps not Thomas Williams's biggest strength. But you bring him on when the game's breaking up, and the guy is, you know, he's got an amazing sense of self-confidence and knows where the try line is. He's got some great ball skills, and he's quick and a threat around the fringes. That's what I want in a scrum half.
Some parts of Reece Webb's game are better than they ever have been. Like the way he draws players around the fringes now is better than when he was younger. He might not be as good on the stopwatch as he was, but these three scrum halves are really, we've said this before, as a squad set of scrum halves, that's better than any country in the Six Nations can put out.
Yeah,
possibly
yeah.
France aside. But none of them are as good around the fringes as Reese Webb is. The ball in hand running, Thomas Williams obviously and Gareth Davies can be devastating, but actually attracting defenders and putting people away, none of them as good as Reese Webb at that. And he's actually improved from when he was in the Wales side on a regular basis. So.
No, that's a good point. But either way, it's not an option. It's not an option for next Saturday. So, saying,
no,
right,
it's not.
Right, we're pretty universal. I mean, we've done a good job of talking about scrum half for 10 minutes when it's blatantly obvious we all wanted to pick Thomas Williams. The only thing from the bench is me. Dan's going for Hardy. I'm going for Gareth Davis. Murph, you get the deciding vote.
Thomas and Gareth Davis. Like I think I said, because he's playing better for the Lethley than Kieran Hardy is.
Yeah, that. Right, Gareth Anscombe starts 10. No doubt about it for me, Dan.
I'm going to throw this to Murph. I'm going to go last. Murph, 10?
Yeah, Anscombe, definitely, yeah.
You don't think Priestland, boys?
No, we don't.
Based on what? he hasn't played an international game for like 4 years, and that was against Georgia.
That's a lot like Thomas Young, international wilderness to facing the best team in the world. It's just, it doesn't matter how well you're playing. It's just not a good idea.
I think you're not worried about his injury.
He wouldn't be in the squad if he wasn't injured. If he was injured, I don't think he'd be playing for the Ospreys. Bearing in mind they signed him nearly 2 years ago, and they hadn't had a game out of him. If there was any danger of him, or they thought there was any danger of him breaking down, they would not have started with him in the season. They must have been super confident that he was ready. There's nothing there to suggest that he's not fully fit, because he's played a number of games and done it very well.
Yeah, I haven't even seen him like move gingerly, you know, after the game, or be subbed off early and be just icing anything. Nothing. There's no signs of any issues. So,
Well, you know my points regarding it. Regarding
you're worried about him getting roughed up, aren't you?
I'm just worried about him coming back in so quickly after so few games. But yeah, yeah. I'd be tempted to go Priestland with a kicking game controlling and have Anscombe on the bench.
I think it's a massive ask against New Zealand to bring Priestland into that.
He's a top player, the Priestland, the players in the English Prem, all regard him as, right up there as a top operator, don't they? Against, great players in that league. I know he's got different players around him, but I think he's a good operator. And yeah, for me, I'd have him starting at 10.
Interesting.
If this wasn't outside the international window, Bigger would start and Anscombe would be on the bench.
100%.
Yeah. So we're only having this conversation because of the necessary greed that we got going on,
Agreed.
All right. Well, Dan would go Priestland with Anscombe on the bench.
But I'm outvoted, I know.
You're outvoted, so it's going to be Anscombe with Priestland on the bench. Look, off the bench, obviously, it gives you that experience. But yeah, I think starting would be a big, would be an absolutely massive call. And I think realistically, he's only in the squad for this game. Realistically, I think that's the reason he's in there, because like we know, Sheedy and Bigger are back in the.
In
the remaining games,
do we think if Jared hadn't injured his sternum or whatever it was in that game, that Jared would have been picked first?
I don't think Pivac trusts Jared at all, if I'm honest. Do you, Dan?
I think if it was a shootout between Jared or Priestland.
Yeah, if both were fit and available to be selected for the squad.
Yeah, I think I'm leaning agreeing with Jed. Yeah, I think he would have, with Bigger being out, I think he would have gone for Priestland, yeah.
Thinking of it, you're absolutely right, because he had the opportunity last Six Nations, didn't he? And he actually made inquiries at Bath first.
Yeah,
yeah, exactly.
And was told no, and then ended up picking Jared. So it was a stupid question by Newt, because we already know the answer.
Which, to be fair, though, I mean the fact that that's happened, maybe it's not as outlandish as I'm suggesting to think that Pivac is giving it serious thought about playing Priestland against New Zealand. Mm. But he's obviously a massive fan of his.
Yeah,
maybe that's a good point.
Although,
it could be.
Hang on. Was he not the same coach you let him go from? Or was it before that that Priestland left Scarlett? I feel like Pivac coached him for a season and he went, maybe.
Yeah, but wasn't it just a big money offer from Bath that just, not really up to Wayne?
He was getting a lot of stick as well, wasn't he?
Yeah, I fully understand why he wanted to go. But yeah, we'll see. Anyway,
it'll be interesting to see who is 10.
Yeah, interesting. I still think it'll be Anscombe, but just
me too.
Throwing that, just stirring the pot a little bit. right, we'll do the centres next. I think it will be Johnny Williams at inside centre. I think Pivac really, really likes him. He's basically brought him back to Wales, didn't he? I think he made inquiries about him when he was coaching the Scarlets as well. He's been very keen to bring him back the whole time. He's only had one run out this season, but it was a fairly impressive one in a game that Scarlets got humped in. So I think it will be Johnny Williams, and I think I would probably do the same. What are you picking at 12, Dan?
Yeah, so it all depends for me on who's playing 10. I think Johnny will get selected if Anscombe's 10. And
excuse me.
If Priestland's at 10, I wonder whether we might see Willis playing there.
Willis is my selection, no matter.
Is he?
Whoever plays 10 makes no difference. I would still have Willis at 12.
Would you? Interesting.
And because of injury, that means he's going to be paired up with Jonathan Davis.
Yeah.
Yeah. Johnny Williams hasn't actually had that many minutes for the Scarlets this season.
He hasn't had that many minutes for Scarlets generally.
Yeah.
Has he? You know, really.
Willis is playing
obviously
well.
Obviously, I would give Tompkins a steer, wide berth. Ben Thomas has not had many minutes either.
No. Has he had a single minute this season?
He did start the game, I think, yeah. So, you could easily pick a match day three there, and just say Johnny Williams, Jonathan Davis, and Ulisi. Alolo. That would be a match day three.
Well, look, I think that is the match day three.
Shaminia, one of those is on the bench.
I'm going Johnny Williams with John Fox. Murphy's going Willis Halaholo with John Fox. Daniel Killick gets the deciding vote.
Halaholo and John Fox.
Correct answer.
I like Willis Halaholo a lot. And to be fair, I think he'd be absolutely bouncing for that game.
Yeah.
So good on him.
End of the game, I can see him all. Yeah. No, end of the game, I can see him all flicking their eyebrows at each other as they're going off the pitch. All the Maori dudes.
It can't be anything new. New Zealand playing against a side full of players who you know might have. Talking of which. That brings us on to the back three, which actually I think there is literally no choice.
Yeah, it is.
Go on.
Well, if Liam Williams is not fit, Johnny McNichol plays 15.
Yeah.
And then the wings, there is literally no choice.
That's it. and I'm working on the assumption Liam Williams isn't fit. So I think it is.
Oh, yeah. Right, you're right, yeah.
Yeah, it's McNichol, Lane and Adams.
Yeah.
And that's it, isn't it? I cannot say... Liam hasn't played a minute all season.
Even if he is fit, he's got to go on the bench. Even if you know, because there's no one else to cover the back three.
I guess you're right, aren't you? Yeah. Unless you go an extra forward on the bench and have Priestland covering 10, 15.
Yeah, 6-2 split. Yeah.
6-2.
But if you're going to have a back three cover. Liam has to play.
Blimey.
It's very lean, the back three selection. We've covered this, haven't we?
See last week's Jonah Holmes rant for me.
Yeah,
I think Priestland can cover 15, can't he?
I think Dan wants him captain as well.
Yeah, senior player there. He'll play and he'll keep the 10 shirt now for a year.
This is really interesting though. Like if Liam Williams isn't fit, is he going to call someone up? I mean, he can't call someone up, can he? He's not going
no,
to.
No, not now.
It's going to be 6-2 if Liam isn't fit. But
well, there's options there, you know, like a Ben Thomas or someone coming in the back three, or
it'll be Tompkins with 23.
Yeah,
it will. It definitely will. Yeah. That's what you'll do. It'll
be on the wing after 10 minutes.
Yeah, which I think happened, didn't it? He didn't play on the wing against them.
He did
against someone. Yeah,
England, wasn't it?
Yeah. Was it
one of the? Yeah,
he was on the left wing, wasn't he?
Yeah. The other thing to mention, I know that it's not a selection issue, but unless I'm mistaken, this is Alamin Jones's 150th international match.
I think you're right. Is it 150th Wales match or international?
No, altogether. Yeah.
Lions, is it, right?
Yeah, I think. Wow. I mean that's a stupid amount of international games. It's a stupid amount of games just for your club. Yeah, you're doing that at international level. I mean, he's the most experienced player there has ever been in this sport. It's ridiculous.
Crazy.
Yeah.
And obviously you play more games in the modern era, but you also get hit harder than ever before. I mean, his longevity is just incredible.
Yeah.
He's never taken a backward step during that time. I mean, he is going to go down, I think, as Wales's greatest ever player. I know it's incredibly hard, and this isn't one to be chucking in the last minute of the show, but in terms of achievement of playing for that length of time and playing at that level, is
he has to be surely.
No, it does. It does transmit to other countries. I was taking some South Africans up to the Vale of Glamorgan. I think they were on a stag do or something. Took them up
there. Spying mission.
Yeah. They were really green. They didn't have a clue about anything to do with Wales. So as we were going up, I pointed out to when you go into the Vale of Morne, you've got the golf courses on the left and the training base on the right. And I pointed out that's where the Welsh rugby team trained down there for the squad. And someone said, so that's where Alamin Jones trains. I went, yeah. He went, oof. So South Africans get it. South Africans get it.
Let us quickly just finish up this side, right? So are we working on the basis that, because if Liam is fit, then he starts for me, if he's actually properly fit.
It's a risk, isn't it?
Yeah, I think we've got to work on the basis. Massive risk. Not. And if I was picking this side from Pivac's squad, because the thing is, again, like, even going a 6-2 split, where are you adding the extra forward? Are you having an extra second row in there? Are you having another prop and having three props on the bench? Because in the back row, you then ended up with Thomas Young and Ellis Jenkins. It's like, I don't know. I don't necessarily see a point in that. I honestly don't know what to do with this. Someone else made the decision. Who's wearing 23?
Well, you could go... if you were playing South Africa, you would go... 6-2 split and put an extra second row on the bench.
Yeah,
but you're not going to. New Zealand are not going to take you into that kind of an area, are they? They're not going to go for a set piece game, so you would want three backs on there.
Yeah,
therefore,
I think it'll be 5-3.
Yeah, therefore, well, maybe you could, if you persist with the 6-2 split, you could go for two back row replacements. So you'd have Thomas Young and Ellis both on the bench because based on the fact they'd probably run the back row ragged. But yeah, if you do the traditional 5-3, it's tricky to know you're going to have a 9, a 10 and another.
I think it'll be Gareth Priestland and Tompkins.
Yeah, I think you had it the first time.
Yeah,
you had it right first time, Jed.
I mean, that's what I think it will be, but I mean, it feels very odd putting Nick Tompkins on the bench right now, but you know, I don't know. Maybe this will be it. Maybe this will be the game we rediscovers that kind of that early sparkling form in the red shirt.
We need to pull off a miracle win. Is a scrum half to finish up on the wing?
That's it.
That's what we need. So we Kieran need Hardy, Kieran Hardy to cover the back three.
Oh yeah, or someone pings a hamstring during the week and Lloyd Williams gets called up, ends up on the bench. Come on, covering 9, 10 and 11, 14, 15.
In better form than Kieran Hardy, by the way.
Yeah, well, I mean, obviously, he did end up playing this time. Was it the autumn last year, the Amazon Cup, or was it in the Six Nations? I can't.
Yeah,
remember.
He did. Yeah.
There's a bit of a theme to this pod, isn't there? Really, with players that aren't in. we want to pick players that aren't in the squad.
Yeah, well, obviously we covered a lot of that last week. That it's I think there would be a lot of different things there are a few things that you could question with those selections. But
People are flagging up all the time based on the performances this weekend. Stephen Thomas, a former guest on here, was on about Jack Morgan and various other with Nicky Smith. Should I say has been getting mentioned? But from a form aside, from a squad structure point of view, Jonah Holmes looks more ridiculous by the day.
Yeah. And he's been playing really well as well, hasn't he?
Yeah. And actually, he was good again on Saturday.
I think that's just crazy, that. But there we are.
Yeah,
there we go. All right, let's just trouble you fellas for a prediction. I'm gonna start with Murph in the absence of Yestin being here.
Well, look, from a rugby logic point of view, we're probably looking at least 20 points based on all form. And also, with my rugby romance head on, I don't want us to beat them at this game because I'm not going.
I have had the same thought.
Yeah.
Especially because I've turned down a ticket for it.
Oh, I've turned down all sorts of opportunities. I could have gone in.
Mate, you might have like 23 on your back, given...
it looks like Thursday. I could have gone to a hospitality at the game. But I've given it a swerve because we just... Even if everyone was available, Bigger was there, Liam was fit, we're still rubbish first out. Almost always. Especially under Gatland, and it's carried on into this regime as well. So therefore, I'd be pleased if we're less than 20 points behind them at the final whistle.
Yeah, I was going to go New Zealand by 20. I'm going New Zealand by 23. New Zealand by 23. There you go. That's my prediction. But to cheer us all up, to sing us out, it's Daniel Killick with the house band.
Yeah, this is going to be
singing the green grass at home.
That's it, the green grass at home. This is the game, I think, with you, Murph, turning down the corporates, so he's fresh for the pod on the Sunday.
I won't be.
Can you imagine if Murph had turned down a ticket for this game, and then Wales went and beat New Zealand? There's no way he's turning up fresh for the pod.
No. Do you know it's worse? Rugby clubs get allocated tickets and then they offload them. And obviously New Zealand, a little bit like in cricket with the Glamorgan Cricket Club, they said Ashes matches sell themselves. Try selling tickets for Sri Lanka. And this is a little bit the problem clubs are facing now, and it's because I think we had 6 New Zealand tickets left a few weeks ago, and God knows how many Australia and box tickets left over. Yeah. But I was at a big meeting, a district meeting actually, a few weeks ago, and a local club in Cardiff still had over 100 New Zealand tickets.
Really?
Yeah. And the only reason that is a problem is because the clubs carry the liability of that. Yeah, if they don't shift the tickets, they still got to pay. So I bet there's a bit of... I mean, I don't expect it took them long to get rid of those tickets eventually, but there wasn't any shortage. I mean, if you went on the WI website, it probably said sold out, but if you had any contacts at clubs, there was no shortage of tickets. So if lightning strikes and something does happen next Saturday, I will feel an even bigger dickhead than normal.
There is a wider point about that though as well, because that is not a new trend of struggling to sell tickets. That's been going on 12, 13 years, I'd say. Mm-hmm. Obviously you go back to the days when there was a bit of scarcity in the fixtures that were played at international level. But the times go by, you play Australia 4 or 5 times a year, and that just doesn't have an appeal all the time. But yeah,
no. It used to be an exotic thing, didn't it, to play a Southern Hemisphere side? Yeah. That just happens all the time. So
yeah. There you go.
Wales by three, boys.
There it is.
Come on.
Perfect. That's Priestland, what I've been waiting for.
Priestland man of the match. Wales by three.
Fantastic. Good stuff. Well, we've got
Priestland man of the match.
Yeah. Wales by three is more realistic than Priestland man of the match, I think.
We'll see you next Sunday, boys.
We'll see you next Sunday when we'll be back to review that and look ahead to the rest of the autumn. Before that, though, we have got a bonus pod for you out later in the week, which was a chat that I had earlier this month with James Stafford, the author and journalist, which actually very nicely talks about the history of Wales versus New Zealand. So make sure you tune into that. That will be out on Thursday. And if you're not subscribed to us on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts, make sure you subscribe, because then you get a notification when we do these bonus episodes. A thank you to the Mighty Murph. A thanks to Dan Killick for his eternal optimism. And
Wales.
And a thanks as always to our sponsors at So Coffee Trades. If you want to get the coffee in, you can do that at socoffeetrades.co.uk. We'll be back next week. Thanks for listening.
Sports Social Podcast Network.